As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App. For Global Wall Street, Steve Eisman, Neuberger Berman. Steve Eisman, if we get an Ed Yardeni market, which is a melt-up, like he's calling it the Roaring Twenties, he's got us out up 30% out the next 30 years. If we get a bull market of our childhood, how do you adapt to that? How do you adapt to the good times if we get the good times? What do you do?
I don't think I really have to adapt. I kind of believe in good times. The economy is fine. The Fed, at least at this point, seems to have engineered, I don't even know if it's a soft landing anymore. And, the U.S. economy is extremely dynamic. The only negative scenario that I could construct, and it's not my base case, I would just say the probability of it is not zero, is just that it looks like it's possible the U.S. economy is reaccelerating, and then maybe at some point inflation starts to go back up again and the Fed has to raise rates again. That's the only negative scenario I could see at this point.
So where are you, Steve, on kind of your Fed call? What do you think the Fed will do? What do you think it should do?
I think the Fed should do nothing.
Nice.
It engineered something pretty amazing, which kind of shocking to everybody, including me. The economy is good. Why would you? The worst case scenario for the Fed would be to actually, I think, cut rates. The economy gets stronger and inflation comes back. Then you're back into the Volcker situation of the early 80s.
Yep.
Yeah, the best thing to do would be just to pat yourself on the back, declare victory, and say, we're completely data dependent. And if things start to weaken a little bit, they can always cut rates. Otherwise, do nothing.
So is that something, when you say kind of wait, is June waiting or is even later in the year waiting for you?
I don't know. I think at least till June.
Okay.
After that, they probably do nothing anyway because they don't want to be accused of getting involved in an election.
Right. Okay.
Steve Eisman, we're celebrating Amazon into the Dow. I did a lot of Dow mathematics overnight, and it's so silly. It has a 15% tech exposure, including minuscule Intos, Cisco, where the street is 27-28% tech exposure as well. How do you approach this massive lifetime overweight in technology? Is there a derivative strategy? Is there a portfolio optimization you believe in?
Well, I do think in overweighting or at least equal weighting tech is something you have to do, but I think there are some themes that are direct offshoots of tech that really should be examined by people that are not technically in tech. And so, for example, because of AI and the NVIDIA chips, which consume so much more electricity and are hotter, the grid has to be improved. So there are companies that benefit enormously from construction companies that benefit enormously from that are not tech companies. The data centers have to be cooled even more. So there are companies that provide those type of services. that are going to do extremely well over the next couple of years. So there are offshoots from tech that are not technically technically tech that really should be looked at very closely.
So, Steve, I guess a lot of folks, I'd love to get your market call where you're seeing opportunity here, because, you know, one of the debates that we hear often is just, do I stick and try to, if I'm not there, get to the Magnificent Seven somehow? Or do I try to find some values in other parts of the market? Maybe I've missed that trade. So coming out of 23, when it was such a hot close to the year, what do you think about tech and being a leader in this market?
You know, I think we're in a bull market. In bull market, people love stories. They just latch onto stories. It's what they think about. It's what they dream about. And if you can invest in something that has a story that people can really understand and get positive about, that's something to do. So tech is one such story.
Yep.
Infrastructure is a similar kind of story that's going to last a long time. And there are a few others. And those are the things that I would focus on.
Steve, we got to go to the banks. You've done a lot of work on this, the acclaim of a certain movie years ago and such. The financial integrity of the system, is there a flavor of bank where you think there's value?
I am not worried about the financial integrity of the United States. I actually think it's incredibly healthy, probably healthier than any time in anyone's lifetime. So I'm not worried about systemic risk. There is risk in the banks in terms of commercial real estate exposure, but that's really a regional bank issue, not a systemic problem. I just don't find banks a particularly interesting investment theme to be involved with at all.
Why is it? That's really important. Why? I mean, just as a general theme, is it just there's too many banks?
First of all, you know, rates look like they're going to stay high, so therefore deposits are going to slowly bleed out of the system into money market funds, which means banks are going to have to remain tight, which means their growth is not going to be great. Right. The only positive thing you could say at this point is that, assuming there's no recession, credit quality will be fine. But that's not a story. It's not anything anybody's going to latch on to.
Do we have like another hour questions for Mr.
Absolutely.
Eisman? I think we do. Steve Eisman, thank you. We've got to get you back on here. Longer discussion. We never even got to private equity, private credit, and debt, and I really want to touch on that. Mr. Eisman is with a small shop, Neuberger Berman, an important investor. We thank Global Wall Street for your enthusiasm over guests like Steve Eisman.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
So I love this out on Reddit. Thank you so much for this. I'm going to Hawaii in the winter. Where can I surf and not die? Joining us now, Hawaiian expert Cameron Dawson. Do you surf in Hawaii?
I certainly don't. My sister does. She's Hawaii-based and a professional surfer. And
wow. So she's like pro.
She's super pro. And the reality is that she lives there in the winter because that's when the waves are the biggest.
Have you ever seen her in these giant... I've never seen the ginormous wave.
You see it and you close your eyes because it's darn scary.
It's scary.
Very. And very dangerous, too.
And she gets like in the tubey thing where the water's on top of her and...
The whole
routine,
thing.
The whole thing.
Hanging 10.
Have you done beginners 101 surfing in Hawaii?
No, yes, yes. But I also am rather afraid of sharks.
Yeah, yeah, I am too. My surfing is to put the umbrella in the Mai Tai. Paul, why don't you bring in our investment expert, Cameron Dawson?
Cameron Dawson joins us here. We want to talk about these markets. She's at New Age Wealth. She's the CIO over there. And let's just start with, I guess, the equity news of the day, Cameron, which is we're going to get a pretty big tech company reporting earnings after the close in NVIDIA. So my question is tech going to continue to be the driver of this market? Do we have to depend upon tech to be the driver of this market?
Given how big it is as a percentage weighting in the index, it has to participate in this market. A really good reminder of that is 2022, where you saw smaller sectors like energy do really well. However, tech was lagging, and that's why the overall market was down. So, yes, this market is very much dependent on tech.
So can I – one of the things I need to see is a broadening out of the market, participation get a little bit better. We saw that in November and December of last year, but I feel like it's kind of faded a little bit. And a lot of technicians will tell you, you really do need to see more participation here. How concerned are you about that?
The key reason why the market has been narrow is because earnings revisions have been narrow. So if you look at the leadership in earnings revisions, the only places that have seen earnings estimates go higher are the Magnificent Seven and tech names. You look at the S&P 500, earnings revisions have been flat over the last 6 months. Equal weight, earnings revisions are down, which means for the average stock, you're actually seeing earnings estimates get cut despite this strong economy.
I'm in a camp that in any great bull market, only 30% of the stocks really work out, and the rest of them are things you really don't want to be in. But that gets to the point of the Vogue, and everybody knows I'm death on this. Where do you stand on rebail? Am I rebailing out of Microsoft right now? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, do you let your winners ride?
Will Danoff at Fidelity is not rebelling from what I can tell.
And I think that you have to respect the trend as well, because a lot of these areas that have led are still in very powerful uptrends. So until you see those trends start to deteriorate, you're better off letting the winners ride. That doesn't mean that you should add to those positions necessarily, meaning you shouldn't chase them at these valuations or at these levels of concentration or crowdedness. There's other opportunities, but I think if you're looking to rebalance, probably letting the winners ride continues to make sense until we get that trend deterioration.
Well, we've certainly had the focus on the Fed, and we're finishing up earnings here, a big earnings print tonight with NVIDIA, but it still feels like the Fed is driving this market here. We started the year with maybe 6 rate cuts priced in, looking at the warp function. Now we're down to something less than that, 3 or 4. How important, or what do you think the Fed will do? What do you think it should do this year? Because that's still important for these markets.
I think there's actually very little urgency for the Fed to act. Given how strong economic data has been, given the fact that you're seeing a reacceleration in some cyclical data, PMIs are turning higher. So with that data backdrop, for them to move to cut quickly, they would risk possibly restoking inflation, which just means status quo and keeping rates where they are is actually the lower risk option.
Yesterday was Synergy Tuesday, and you know, I'm going to suggest the word out there is scale. If I identify that I want to be advantaged by scale, how do you approach that within a portfolio? How do you, you're not going to guess the next M&A transaction, but on a sector basis, how do you prepare for M&A, or is it just something you can't control? It's just out there.
Well, I think that if you are looking for smaller companies that are getting bought out, you're starting to see a big tick up in M&A, and that is supported by big cash balances, companies still sitting on cash balances.
I saw a chart yesterday. It's a hockey stick.
It is a hockey stick, and it's also good to remember that that cash is also earning 5% right now. Yeah. It's one of the reasons why net interest expense is down over the last year. It's running down 36%. Wow. That's never happened during a rate hiking cycle, and this just shows you how topsy-turvy this cycle is. High cash balances, less exposure to short-term debt, and result being is that you're making more money on your cash than you're seeing your interest costs
go up.
When you
have a 5% interest rate and a hockey stick, that's called a CCM 5-stripe.
Oh, there you go. Okay, I'm familiar with that.
That's the rich kids had CCM. John Lloyd had a CCM 5-stripe. I didn't. You know.
So what do we do here, Cameron? for new ideas. What's a new idea from you? Like, what have you been telling your clients here? Maybe he's starting out 24. What's something new? Because otherwise, I'm just going to stick my money in my two-year treasury at 4.6%.
We are finding names within healthcare, names within biotech. That's areas where you're starting to see some signs of life. Biotech has been in a bear market for 2 years.
Of really? Course, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been absolutely ugly. So actually, across the capital stock, whether we're looking at equities or even within private markets, we're seeing a lot of opportunity within healthcare and biotech, just areas that have been left behind and valuations aren't too stretched and notably positioning isn't crowded.
Do you buy weak dollar international? I mean, in the old days, mm-hmm. you know, it was religion. You have to have 5% of your portfolio in international. That worked out. but you know, like, do you just stick with U.S. exceptionalism and large cap, or is there a new edge theory?
Yeah, we have been underweight international. We're now neutral. You're right. The dollar is absolutely imperative. The only
Thank
time
you.
That you have
Gospel.
Seen major
yes.
international bull markets
Gospel.
Is in periods of major dollar bear markets, the 2000s, yeah. the mid-80s. If you don't have a major dollar bear, you will not have an international bull.
Paul, Malaysian ringgit yesterday.
Oh, please.
You know, our reporter,
we saw that. Yep.
Our reporter in Dubai called me up and she said, hey, stupid, Malaysian ringgit, new weakness. That's what we're talking about.
All right, very good.
I'm just doing that to impress Cameron.
I know.
She's surfing in Malaysia after a while.
Exactly. So we're pretty much done earnings here, about 80% of the way through. We got some retail names still to report. Anything you took away from this earnings cycle that made you more or less bullish, or maybe just change your outlook here?
I think the one key message is that pricing power is really starting to fade, mostly on the good side of things. Mm. You're starting to see where you were running at high single digit pricing increases, that's now down to low single digits, which just means that the estimates for revenue growth of an acceleration in 24 and 25 that are currently baked in may be a little bit difficult. Then the question is, does pricing ceilings hit services like it's hit goods? Mm-hmm. Services inflation is still very high. Look, with Tony from Marriott yep. talking about still strong pricing growth. Yep. Is that able to be sustained?
So, I mean, I think what we heard from Tony, I mean, they're still seeing some pretty strong demand. We're hearing it from the cruise companies as well. So it seems like the consumer is in good shape. Is that something you're banking on for 2024? Because if the consumer were to pull back, obviously that would be something that we haven't seen just in the recent past.
Consumers will continue to be able to spend as long as they have jobs. Real wage yep. growth has turned positive, which is supporting consumer spending, but they are starting to push back on some of these price increases. Walmart called it choicefulness. They're being very selective.
It's driving me nuts. It's like the new word. Come on.
But prices are crazy. I was looking at Pearl Jam tickets and they're $48,000. At a certain point, when do people hit a ceiling and being able to be able to afford these kind of experiences?
Right. We got to meld in our two great interviews here, Paul. I mean, I got the Marriott Ko'olina Beach Club in yep. Oahu. It's like $700 a night after fees.
Well, yeah.
It's like beachside. I mean, this is the new luxury
yep.
where Tony was staying in.
And Pearl Jam, then you've really got to dig in your pocket for Pearl Jam.
Well, the concert tickets, I've given up.
And half of that goes to Ticketmaster.
I mean, you're better at that. Yeah. I mean, I don't, to me, it's like a consortium or something.
It's basically a monopoly effect.
Yeah.
Ticketmaster.
I mean, I don't know. What are you not doing here, Cameron? Quickly here, we're out of time, but what's the number one thing you want to avoid doing?
I think chasing very liquidity sensitive, low balance sheet or low quality balance sheet names. They've run a lot over the last couple right. of months in pricing in the expectation mm-hmm. for an easier Fed. If the Fed doesn't deliver, interest rates goes
Cameron,
up, those are going to reverse.
We need a photo of you surfing. It'll stay we won't put it on social. It won't go out on Instagram, I promise. LinkedIn, it won't go out, I promise.
I have an old one from when I was a kid. I'll dig
it up.
No,
we need a new one.
Oh,
Cameron
goodness.
Dawson, surfing from Hawaii. Good morning, America. Cameron Dawson, thank you so much with New Edge. On her way to Hawaii. We're great to get her in here quickly today. I thought of Margie Patel, I think it was yesterday, Paul, during Synergy Tuesday. I mean, Walmart's out, Home Depot's out. What's a 2x4 cost? Da 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 da. And all that mattered was middle single digit, higher single digit dividend increase.
Yeah.
Use of cash. Margie Patel owns the high ground on this with Allspring Global Investments, long ago and far away with Mr. Caray at Pioneer. Margie Patel, what did you learn from Phil Caray? He was a giant. I used to go up the elevator with him at 60 State Street. What did you learn from Philip Carré?
Well, I think that a creative, open mind, interested in all kinds of different things, really was the nature of his brilliance, a flexible way of thinking. And we don't see a lot of that today in investments in other parts of the area.
It's amazing how it's become cookie cutter versus the entrepreneurial days of John Templeton and Mr. Carré. Margie, use of cash right now. We saw it from Home Depot. We saw it from Walmart. What are we missing here? What will use of cash forward look like?
Well, I think more of the same. And I think really what the market's focusing on is prospects of growth. And once you get away from the handful of very high growth companies, you know, such as NVIDIA, there aren't a lot of sectors that have outstanding growth. And that's why the market's focusing on what the Fed's going to do, what the economic growth is going to be, and why it's reacted so sharply when companies have reported, you know, say mild trimming of their expectations and gotten really locked.
Hey, Margie, what are you taking out of this earnings season? We've had about 80% of the S&P 500 companies report already. Any themes coming out of you that maybe affect your outlook?
I think the main thing is you can see a good expected results, better than expected, as we've had for the last few quarters. But I think what you're seeing is a sort of erosion in the earnings expectations and achievements, which to me telegraphs that 24 is going to be a year of lower growth. And after things have really spiked up with so much expenditures from COVID, from the infrastructure bill and so forth, now we're going to see growth moderate. And I think that's what the market's focused on.
And does that suggest kind of a moderating picture for U.S. equities here? Because there's a sense that the Fed will cut, but maybe a little bit later than we thought. So how does that affect your 24 view for the markets overall?
Well, I think as far as the Fed, there's uncertainty because whereas people were thinking they'd cut in March, then the feeling was it would be delayed. And now some people are saying, oh, well, inflation is a little bit stubborn. They may raise rates instead. But it all comes back to if the Fed raises rates, the economy will slow, or the economy is slowing, and that's why the Fed's cutting. And that also puts a little bit of pressure on equity. So I think the first half of the year is chopping around and not really going anywhere.
All right, given that backdrop, what are the sectors that maybe investors should be paying attention to? Should we be focusing on the sectors that pay good dividends? Tom was just highlighting some dividend growth stories that we've seen recently. How do you think about sectors?
Well, I think if you look at companies that have a balance of good growth and also pay a dividend, because a dividend really is kind of proof that a company has sustainable cash flow when they pay a dividend. I think really sectors, technology, industrials, some parts of healthcare, which look like they've sort of hit bottom and might be starting to grow over the next year. But it's still pretty far and few between.
We started the show this morning, Margaret, with Paul's observation on a 7% mortgage rate. Interest rates are back up again is well. As you manage money, can you get a total return that gets you back to the long-term log trend line of the Bloomberg Total Return Index, the old Lehman Index? Can we get back to what we do with price appreciation in bonds?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you look at high yield right now, we're looking at returns of say 6.5 to say 7.75. Most bonds are trading a little bit of a discount. And so I think that might be fairly competitive with equities this year. I'm thinking equities will be high single digit, low double digit. And defaults are still rather low. I think they'll stay low in the high yield market. If there'll be defaults, they'll be in some of the more illiquid parts of the loan parts of the market.
Well, I was surprised, Margie, looking back over the past, looking back at just last year, how well high yield performed relative to other areas in fixed income. With all the talk we had about recession just right around the corner, I was surprised to see double digit returns for high yield last year. How do you think about high yield credit this year?
Well, I think the high yield market is actually in better shape than it's ever been in my career, which is saying a lot. The reason is companies took advantage of that period of very low rates to restructure their balance sheets, pay off their bank lines. So they're much less sensitive, like investment grade companies, to changes in what the Fed does. And I think that we're not seeing any excesses in the high yield market sector coming that's swamped the market and will pull the whole thing down. So it looks pretty balanced.
Margie, Ed Yardeni, you and I know Ed Yardeni from ages ago. It's C.J. Lawrence. Wow, is he a bull. And what's fascinating is he's a responsible bull. He's basically on log trend line. I'm going to call it up 8, 9, 10% per year. But he's extended out like we used to in the old days. He's got the courage to say, here's where we are 36 months out. Are you running money saying, here's where we are 36 months out?
For me, that's a little long. I'm really looking at, say, 1 year to maybe 2 years. But really, the point I think that he's made wise up to this long-term growth is the economy looks pretty balanced. There's no sector you can point to. It looks very vulnerable to the Fed's policy or just economic slowdown. So there's no reason right. why the economy shouldn't continue to grow.
Margie, thank you. Margie Patel with Allspring Boston.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Lisa Mateo here with the newspapers. And here, and later on, you're warned, the obligatory tall people article. Great. Let's start with something that doesn't about the bruises on my forehead.
I found that one just for you, picked out to me. We'll get to it. Did you know that New York job seekers, you can now choose whether you want AI to look at your resume or not? So this is a new law. It's governing AI hiring in the city, the first of its kind in the nation, okay? So online applications, you now have to companies have to disclose if they're using AI, and they have to ask the applicants if they do not want their resume scanned by a machine. Now, here's the problem, because algorithms, they kick off qualified candidates or embedded unintentional bias or in hiring. But a lot of people are saying, is skipping AI a good idea? Because they say it can hurt your chance of getting hired, because companies, well, they aren't obligated to review all the applications they get. So I don't know.
So
what do you choose?
Is it like college applications? Is it like a regular job application now? They're getting 300 applicants for one spot because of AI?
They get a lot of applicants. They're using the AI to make it easier to go over the applications. But people are saying, oh, well, AI is just kicking them off. You know?
Well,
it's not giving them a chance.
Consultants out there that'll tell you how to tailor your resume, your CV, to screen well for AI using these terms, these hooks, that'll screen well. Same thing. It's similar to what you can do for, you know, colleges and things like that. So for every point, there's a counterpoint,
yeah,
I think.
When Matt Winkler looked at my resume, he fell off his chair and hit the floor. He was laughing so hard. And Lori said, oh, enough of that. Next.
The four-day work week. Let's see your thoughts on this. She's on a roll today.
Yes.
Okay, this is the Financial Times. They found this study. It's a trial in the UK. Just want to put that out there. It ran for the last 6 months of 2022. So what they found for people who work that four-day work week, some were the fifth day on call, but the four-day work week, the positive thing, improved well-being, improved productivity, boosted retention, improved recruitment. But the negative side is that the work was more intense. So you have less time for that coffee break. You know, you couldn't chat as much amongst your fellow workers. Higher costs for companies because businesses are increasing their headcount so they can offset those shorter working hours. So the main result is that most of the companies decided to keep that flexible pattern, keep the 4 days.
Okay, good for them. I mean, that's not an option for some of us, but
correct.
For those that it is, good luck, enjoy it.
Okay, I'm ready.
He's not feeling it. All right, this one, Tom, this one was for you. I found it. I didn't realize the troubles that you go through when you step into a car for those tall people.
It's a huge deal.
It is.
Huge deal.
So
that's why Tom gets first class all the time because there's no
has to get picked up by the big car. I'm telling you, the best new cars and SUVs for tall people. This is the study that came out from Dow Jones, because you need the best headroom, legroom, windshield height apparently is the thing too. You get bruised knees, head bumps. I mean, it's a tough situation. So they polled people that were 6'4" tall. They were all short. Drivers reviewed. That's short at Kelley Blue Book. The best all-around room, there's a 2024 Chevy Tahoe, the base price, $58,000, okay? If you can't go that high, there's also the GMC Sierra Crew Cab, that's $47,000. Mm-hmm. Or you can go with the GMC Canyon, the base price, $37,000. So that's overall, but they break
what
it down.
What kills you, I mean, Paul? Tell, yeah. I don't know if you have this in your new rig. He's got the fancy rig with Apple CarPlay.
Sure.
But what kills you is the sunroof takes out 2 or 3 inches of headroom in the back seat.
Really?
That's what they said, yes.
I prefer the old Suburbans to the new Suburbans.
Yep.
I was in a Lincoln car yesterday that actually was, it's like an SUV kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
Was actually comfortable.
Okay.
There's a new Cadillac that's comfortable.
Yeah.
I was in a Tesla coming out of a Philippine restaurant in Queens.
Oh, great.
And I'm screaming, I can't get in a Tesla. And I actually fit
and
in the back seat of some new model. Thank you, Elon Musk. But this is like a huge deal.
Yeah.
And you know what it is, Lisa? In the front seat, if you have to lean back to get the headroom in, you can't reach the stick shift.
Yeah, and the steering wheel becomes an issue too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, it's like traumatic. It's like,
fortunately,
you know,
the back seats of the Bentleys are very spacious.
Oh, yes.
That's kind of how we had to. We were searching, you know, shopping for the surveillance Bentley.
In the Mercedes G-Class, I can barely squeeze it. Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Greatly appreciate that.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.